Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mitch Albom and Bob Ryan.
I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and welcome to the Sports Reporters Podcast, the podcast incarnation of the long-running Sunday morning TV show on ESPN. We always used to have three panelists and a host on Sunday morning, but then again, we only did it once a week. In podcast world, we get to flip around quite a bit. We do it Mondays and Thursdays, normally three people. Today, Bobby and I will be handling the duties by ourselves as Mike Lupica is traveling. He'll come back and join us on Thursday again. And by that point, we'll be into a World Series. And by that point, we'll be into an NBA season, both of which we're going to preview here. We'll be on the cusp of some really big college football games, which we'll talk about. But let's begin today's podcast with football results from the professional kind. A lot of, you know, surprising wins and in the way that they were done, and some big upsets as well in the NFL weekend. Green Bay, however, let's begin there. Yeah, Green Bay started the season as a question mark. A new coach, Matt LaFleur, how is he going to get along with Aaron Rodgers? Had the window closed on the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Well, right now, Aaron Rodgers has got the window open. He's leaning outside. The bluebirds are singing. There's no clouds in the sky. He's like whistling a happy tune out that window at 6-1 with an impressive win yesterday. What do you think, Bob?
Coming off his personal best game of the season, and he looked, all the talk about, you know, who's the MVP, and we can get to that. And he's not in the discussion any longer. But tell you what, he showed the youngins that he still knows how to play this game and play that position and master this position. His legs are still viable. He ran for one as well as throwing for five. I was a good American, Mitch. I paid my dues. I'm proud of myself. I saluted the flag, and I sat down in my easy chair yesterday. In fact, I even started at 10 o'clock with the previews. I did. I started at 10 o'clock at Eastern with the previews and propped myself in an easy chair, and I came up for air at the end of the Cowboys-Eagles game with the dinner in the middle. That's it. So I watched that whole game, and I was really impressed with him. He spread the ball around. There's all the talk about he didn't have Devontae Adams. He didn't need him yesterday. He was terrific. And, you look at the NFC, and you know, we'll get right to the chase. It is wide open. And I know San Francisco 6-0. We'll get to that. But why not us? They're one of the teams that has a right to say, why not us?
Yeah, well, several things on that. First of all, I really think that the mark of a great and sustaining quarterback, and you see it in your backyard with Tom Brady, is when he's able to keep his excellence despite a changing cast around him. Now, those of you who still think that Aaron Rodgers is throwing to Jordy Nelson, Jake Kumerow, Alan Lazard, and Darius Shepard were the receivers, along with Marquez Valdez-Scantling and Geronimo Allison. All right,
we can't say Valdez-Scantling enough. Scantling, excuse me.
Well, you said it plenty yesterday.
And
this is very similar to what Tom Brady does with different casts of many forgettable receiver names, certainly after they leave New England or before they got there. And it just shows you that it's on the quarterback and his ability to create plays, to roll out, to find options, to, you know, keep plays alive, turns these guys into stars. And now everybody says, why don't we have Marquez Valdez-Scantling? Well, you know what? If you had Marquez Valdez-Scantling on your team, or if it was the Lions team or anybody else, he'd just be another receiver. But when they're catching passes from a guy who can just put the ball in places that other quarterbacks can't, he makes them look good. They did beat the Raiders. The Raiders are no great accomplishment. But, you know, they beat the Lions the week before when the Lions, you know, really played a good game, and they still managed to beat them. And I think they're absolutely on a roll. I would contest, Bobby, that they've got New Orleans as well as San Francisco to think about before they put a crown on their heads from the NFC.
They all have each other to think about. There's nobody that's head and shoulders or clearly above anybody else in the NFC right now, to my knowledge. I don't believe so. That's my opinion. Oh, no question. Oh, by the way, we must point out to people who didn't see the game or aren't aware of the game, the final score is misleading, that this was a competitive game, that the key play of the game was a faux pas by Derek Carr, who, while trying to extend himself to hit the pylon on rushing a touchdown, lost control of the football at the inopportune moment and turned what was a touchdown or hope into a touchback, and when it was a one-possession game. Yeah. And from that point on, they never recovered, right?
Yeah.
Never recovered from that. That was, and it turns out, I didn't know this, but I learned this, that this is the second time in his career he's done this. He did it 2 years ago as well. This was a highly inopportune play. It was the play of the game. I mean, there's no question. And because the Packers went down the field from there and scored, and they never looked back after that. So anyway, the Raiders were there. It was a competitive game for a while, but Rodgers was brilliant from start to finish.
Yeah, and we'll see what they're made of as the season goes on. You know, they've got some interesting games still to come, as do they all.
Including next week.
Yeah.
Except we'll get to that. They're playing Kansas City, folks. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, I know. Patrick Mahomes, less Kansas City. But we'll talk about that in a second. Now, another team that should have been 6-1 in my book is the Seattle Seahawks, mm-hmm. who got upended by a Baltimore team that, you know, this Baltimore team with Lamar Jackson, they are like a young colt to me. Unpredictable, wild, but can be faster than anybody in the barn, you know, when you get them straight. And so they're going to have weeks where you're going to expect them to win and they're not going to live up to it. But then they're going to have weeks like yesterday where they just took it to the Seattle Seahawks, who had been on an absolute roll, and finally got an interception out of Russell Wilson, who hadn't had any, and forced him into a 20-for-41 day. When was the last time you can remember Russell Wilson being under 500 in his percentage for throwing? And while Lamar Jackson again ran for over 100 yards, mm-hmm. while passing for a pedestrian 143 yards, and Seattle took it on the chin there. And I don't know, is that a more mark of Baltimore's excellence? They have the same record now. Baltimore 5-2.
They are, they're dangerous. They're just dangerous. I mean, they got a good game. You know, it's funny, when I looked at this Patriots schedule, I said they're going to be 8-0 before they play Baltimore, and the first real team they're going to play, which just turned out not to be true because the Jets are going to give them trouble, by the way. But anyway, they're
you really
team,
think
you know,
the
respect,
Jets are going to give them trouble?
Yes, I do.
Really?
They're a team of respect at Baltimore. And Jackson, he continues to be a fascinating figure in this league. You know, what is he, Mitch? He's the fifth or sixth leading rusher right now in the league.
Oh, yeah.
league. He's on pace.
Running backs can't get 100 yards anymore. You know, those days are long, long, long gone. A running back breaks 100 yards, it's big news. And he does it on a regular basis from the quarterback position.
On his way to breaking Michael Vick's quarterback rushing record, single season record.
Yesterday by any chance? On the pregame, I didn't know what to make of it. You know, they asked him, well, what do you think of him breaking your record? And he was very sullen, or rather somber. And he sort of said, well, you know, I worry for his health. It's not something that you should do regularly. And I don't know if he was really saying, I don't want my record broken, or if he was really saying, you know, when I look back on it, I would have had a longer career if I didn't run all the time that they wanted me to run when I was younger, because he paid a price for that. Of course, as all running quarterbacks eventually do, if you continue to run them, eventually.
Anybody seen RG3 lately? You know?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be interesting because this is the way he came into the league. This is the profile that he presented. You know, that he was the rushing guy, and could he throw at an NFL level? And he certainly is a pedestrian thrower. And because it comes to my theory is that you just have to be good enough as a quarterback. Too much is made about elite this and elite that. It just has to be good enough. He does it his way. But the thing is, he might get away with it this year. That might go a long way. Right. But the skepticism about longevity for him, we'll be there because no one's ever been able to have a lengthy career with this style of quarterbacking.
No. Now, continuing the NFC, and then we'll get over to the AFC eventually, but New Orleans, which is every bit as strong a contender for best team in the NFC, along with Green Bay, and arguably, I mean, record-wise, San Francisco, although beating Washington 9-0 doesn't really qualify as a great win, even though you won. It was in the rain and all the rest of
that.
Get
out of Dodge.
Get out of Dodge. But New Orleans, in a featured game, took Chicago. I mean, this final score was 36-25. It could have been 136-25. First of all, Chicago's offense has absolutely disappeared. I didn't know this, but they're averaging 8 yards a drive. Did you know that?
No.
That 8.5 something yards a drive. They have not had a 300-yard game yet. Total offense, I'm talking about. And I'm not talking passing. I'm talking about total offense. They have not had a 300-yard game. This is a team that everyone thought was going to come off of last year and just keep barreling forward. Trubisky was going to get better. And obviously, you know, they had Khalil Mack and everything. Nuh-uh. They're 3-3. They're lucky to be 3-3. Their offense is nil. And New Orleans just stomped on them all game long. So Chicago right now, in a division where you could argue that it's the toughest division in football. I mean, the Lions now have a losing record, but up till yesterday, nobody had a losing record. And they've got Green Bay and Minnesota ahead of them. So they have a long, long road to climb if they want to have any playoff possibilities. Yeah. Meanwhile, here's my question to you, Bob Ryan. I think I know what your answer is, but Teddy Bridgewater has led this team undefeated since Drew Brees went out. It's probably two more weeks or so before Drew Brees is ready to come back if he's on schedule. If he continues to win and they play the Cardinals, so that ought to be a pretty damn easy win, and the Falcons, another damn easy win these days, do you just say, Drew, take a couple more weeks and get yourself healthy, or do you rush Drew Brees in whenever he's ready?
I think Teddy has afforded them the luxury of not doing anything rash with Drew Brees. In due time, he has to get his job back, obviously. He's Drew Brees. He's going to the Hall of Fame. He's still viable, as he proved last year. But I think that there shouldn't be a sense of urgency. By the way, Cardinals are, you know, sneakily better than people thought. They've won three in a row. But the other team you mentioned, they're just abysmal.
The Falcons are terrible. And
see if Dan Quinn's even coaching by that time.
Yeah, they're going to play him twice in the next 5 weeks. In fact, the schedule for the Saints, and you kind of wonder how they got this schedule, except of, you know, obviously their division, because they had such a good record last year. Cardinals, Falcons, Buccaneers, Panthers, Falcons. Those are their next five games. I mean, the way that they're playing, they should be heavily favored in all of them. And then finally, they have a showdown with the 49ers, which at that point will be an interesting game. But that's not till December, Bob.
Wow.
So
that's great. Well, that's comparable to the schedule, you know, the Patriots have had to this point.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. But I wonder what happens with Teddy Bridgewater. Like, okay, we all agree, everybody sort of agrees, that eventually he's going to sit down and Drew Brees is going to take back over. And presuming Drew Brees doesn't get hurt again, which, of course, you know, hurt once at that age, it wouldn't be unthinkable that he comes back, plays a game, and gets hurt again. But let's say he plays out the string, whatever happens with New Orleans, be they go to a Super Bowl or stopped in the playoffs. Does Teddy Bridgewater then take off? Has he basically earned himself a starting job someplace with the way that he's played this year?
It's going to be interesting, yes, to see whether people were going to make a run, you know, how much.
Wouldn't you?
At this point? Let me ask you a question. Who do you think if you're a Bears fan, who would you like to see quarterbacking next week?
Really?
Trubisky or Teddy Bridgewater?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just one of several, but that certainly is one. Yeah, no, it's interesting. And they owe him, you know, they're going to wind up seeing, depending on how they turn out this year, owing him a great debt of gratitude for sure. And he's bailed them out very nicely. You know, we've seen this historically in this league as far back as Earl Morrow, for God's sake. You know, it can happen. Nick Foles is a recent example, it can happen, and only just brings my, you know, my theory is that people make way too much about elite quarterbacks, and you just got to be good enough, and right now he's good enough.
Speaking of good enough, you had 2-3-3 teams going at it in the NFC East. The Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles, somebody had to take a lead, and the Cowboys just look like they got everything back. I mean, they look like the Cowboys of early season, except those Cowboys were playing terrible teams and racking up the score. Here, they beat the Eagles 37-10. The Eagles turnovers, the way the way the defense for Dallas played was every bit as remarkable as the way the offense, which is predictable when Dak Prescott's good and when Zeke Elliott is running. You know, they're just going to be good. But holding Philadelphia to 10 points, you know, none in the fourth quarter, only a field goal in the second half, that was pretty impressive.
There's something going on. I happen to be, strangely enough, an eyewitness a week ago when the Vikings ran all over the Eagles at home. And this is 2 weeks in a row where the Eagles have shown nothing. And I'd be very concerned. It's hard to, you know, right now, it's hard to flash back and imagine how recently they were the Super Bowl champs. They don't look good at all. And the thing about it, though, is that you have to keep the faith if you're anybody in that division, because that division, you know, the Dallas appears to have asserted itself, but it's still, you know, it's not, you know, they're not totally out of it. They're only one, you know, they're not out of it, but they got to figure out there's something wrong. They got to address it. And there's no question about that.
Yeah. 37-10 was also the score of the LA Rams against the Atlanta Falcons. And that, again, beating the Falcons doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, Matt Ryan got hurt, which doesn't surprise me the way that his offensive line was totally collapsing. They were sacking him at will. It was painful to watch. I almost was praying that Matt Ryan would, you know, like not get seriously hurt, but just, you know, take a ding and get out of that game to preserve him. Because how Atlanta has fallen apart is a study in and of itself and a story for another day. They didn't just go from a Super Bowl team that was, you know, had what was the lead? 28-3 lead over New England and blow it. But now they're 1-6. I mean, they're arguably the worst team in football right now. And you would not have thought to say that even before this season. Meanwhile,
no.
Jared Goff and Todd Gurley were back in business there together. And, of course, they had Jalen Ramsey, who, I don't know, I guess he did okay. They were playing against...
Well, he had a... you know, it's interesting, listening to the experts debate this whole Jalen Ramsey impact thing. You know, when everyone knows that the big need for the Rams is offensive linemen, and yet they went out and mortgaged the farm, if you will, yet again, well, in terms of draft picks to get a first rate player at a position other than offensive line, strengthening up that position. But it seemed to me most people agree it was a good move for them, because they're committed. They're not turning back. They don't have a first round pick. They're going to go 5 years as this current situation from 17 to 22 without a first round pick. Shelling out big money for Goff and Gurley, and now they're shelling out big money, and Aaron Donald, and now they're showing out big money for him. This is they made that commitment. Yeah. That ship sailed, and that's what they're doing.
Right. This was a mid-season move. This wasn't at the beginning of the year what they thought. This was a reaction to injuries, really. I mean, Aqib Talib was hurt. John Johnson was hurt. They traded Marcus Peters. So they put Ramsey in there because they were out of bodies, you know. Now, most teams, and by the way, this is what I think we're really seeing. You start to see it at this point of year, 6 weeks, 7th week. All teams start the year with some stars in different positions. And on paper, you can make arguments for why this guy looks good or that guy looks good. But to me, in the NFL, the teams that separate themselves are the ones who are 2 and 3 and sometimes even 4 deep, because it is absolutely inevitable that your key players are going to get injured at some point. It's just, that's what the NFL is now. Nobody skates through 16 games anymore. Everybody's completely dinged up. And usually, with the exception of some quarterbacks who are just, you know, the Matthew Staffords and Philip Rivers types, they're just iron men and they tend to just keep playing no matter what. But most guys, especially defensive backs, wide receivers, guys who have to jump up and have a lot of impact, they'll miss 2 games, 3 games here, there, whatever. And it's who you have coming in for them that ends up determining if you get the win that week or not. And you're seeing a lot of teams now as they've lost players who are getting thin and are losing games, and other teams that are deep are not.
I think that you're right, and I think that that means to me what that says is some coaches are obviously better than others, but more important, as Hubie Brown would say, more important the unsung heroes of this league in that regard are the personnel directors and the people who know the complete depth of the college world, who know the scan that waiver wire with a discerning eye, who know or who have sources and can produce these people for the coach to coach up. And to me that says it. But I think you're absolutely right. You mentioned
and that's why when we lament it, but I'm amazed I'm about to say this, but this is why they treat those draft picks as precious as they do. Like a second round draft pick, it seems to be like a bag of chips in Vegas for a lot of these GMs. And we keep going, wait a minute, you traded a known guy for 2 second round picks. But for these GMs, these second round picks are guys. You're not going to necessarily get lucky and get a Brady in a late round. But they're guys who can step in when the inevitable happens and, the starter gets hurt. And a second round guy filling out your roster is going to be better than a fifth round guy or an expensive one guy, especially if you can get two picks. So I guess that's why they look at those things as so precious, because of what you just said, Bob, is the depth of building a roster. And that's how GMs kind of make their money and keep their jobs.
Yeah.
Because the injuries are absolutely unavoidable. And I don't care what kind of shape you're in, everybody gets hurt this game.
Right. And in addition to inexplicable, that's why we're going to get to Mahomes and Miles. Well, what the hell, we might as well get to him.
Yeah, might as well get to him.
What I find interesting about the Patrick Mahomes thing is that he was injured on what appeared to me to be an innocuous quarterback sneak. And I find that interesting in that the Methuselahian quarterback of the New England Patriots is still a premier quarterback sneaker, the best I have ever seen, as a matter of fact, certainly in this city. He did it on successive plays last week. He sneaked from the 4 to the 1 and the 1 in. And I just find it. So it can happen at any time, Brady, that's all. So Mahomes got hurt. If you got hurt scrambling and somebody took a shot. No, he got hurt just lunging forward on a quarterback sneak. So
well,
it can
it's
happen
a freak. And that had to be a freak injury.
Yeah,
I mean, it had to be a freak angle or whatever, because
something
you're right.
Like,
it wasn't impact. He didn't have any speed. He got twisted underneath somebody. And of course, in hindsight, you say, well, why are you sending your most precious player, the MVP of the league, into a pile like that? But before everybody starts second guessing that, then they're like what you just said. Well, Tom Brady quarterback sneaks. It's not that hard. Everybody quarterback sneaks. Now, of course, they'll probably be rethinking it. A bigger question is, I hear 3 to 6 weeks. That's what they're saying on Patrick Mahomes, 3 to 6 weeks. Now, 3 or 6 is a big difference. Remember, they're not undefeated. They're 5-2. And, they're lucky that they got to play the Broncos when that happened. But now they play the Packers.
Yeah.
And you have to favor the Packers absolutely against Kansas City when they don't have Mahomes. I mean, they for better or for worse, they redesigned their offense. It's around him. And I know they have other good players who are on that team, but those good players are made good. Tyreek Hill and Kelce and those guys, they're made good by what Mahomes can do. And even the running backs, but the threat of Mahomes throwing, is always going to change your defense. He's not there now. And Matt Moore, they're talking about him like, oh, wow. Matt Moore was out of football, essentially, not too long ago. So is Matt Moore going to lead them to a win over the Packers? Is he going to lead them to a win over the Vikings, who are up next?
Yeah, no.
Then they've got the Titans, the Chargers, and the Raiders. Those are three games that, you could argue a backup could lead them. And then they play the Patriots.
Yeah,
that would be 6 weeks.
But the next 2 weeks are clearly daunting for them, with or without him.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's definitely going to be without him. I mean, nobody.
What I'm saying, but it would be even if he were there.
Right.
That would be a daunting.
Yeah, nobody's saying he'll be back by then. But if he misses
Packers,
the
Vikings.
6 weeks, they've got 5 losses already. Home field and all the rest of that stuff is not necessarily theirs. And so it's just amazing. Just amazing how, you know, how things can change like that. You know, when I mean, they just look like a sure bet. And now you don't know. I mean, you know, fortunately, I mean, unless it's going to be the Oakland Raiders, and I really don't think they're going to have it, they're not going to be threatened a whole lot in their division. The Broncos are terrible. The Chargers are terrible. They're not going anywhere. But, you know, if Kansas City loses two or three games out of the six that Mahomes is out, and Oakland somehow gets its act together, who knows?
Yeah. You mentioned the Broncos. They're shockingly bad at the moment, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And now that, you know, finally, I don't know how long, but the discussions about, you know, hey, John, you know, ever since that last Super Bowl, when you had a certain quarterback, you haven't exactly had the magic touch finding a quarterback.
Wouldn't you say, Bob, that this year, maybe more than some others, the teams that are really bad are really surprising? Like, okay, you can count on Miami not being good.
Oh, yeah,
you can count on Cincinnati not being good. And by the way, between the two of them, they haven't won a game yet. Miami's 0-6 and Cincinnati's 0-7. You can count on the Lions, you know, not having a huge record. That can't be a shock to anybody that they're 2-3-1. But look at, for example, the Broncos, 2-5, the Chargers, 2-5. I'm doing a parting shot on, you know, how fast the mighty fall from a 12-4 team to 2-5. The Redskins 1-6.
No, they're
you know, the Atlanta 1-6.
Yep.
You know, these are teams that you expect to be, you know, better performers than that, and it's kind of shocking how bad they've gotten. You know, even Tennessee, you know, a lot of people expected. I mean, they benched Marcus Mariota. He was their future,
right,
you know.
Right.
So it's weird how, you know, traditional names, Pittsburgh, you know, are no longer threats this season.
You know, I mean, in theory, sports ought to be more cyclical than, you know,
right.
It ought to be somewhat cyclical, you know, in that regard. But I'm going to do a parting shot on a league that is surprisingly tyrannical, but more than people realize. But at the top, I mean, but. You know, it's interesting. I'm just specifically here. There's a couple of teams that we mentioned that have they're fallen empires. One was once an empire, and that were the Redskins. The Redskins were a team of the '80s. You know, they won three different Super Bowls. What Joe Gibbs did with three different quarterbacks, a singular achievement in the whole realm of NFL coaching. But they stood for something. They meant something. And now, of course, they are just absolutely abysmal, and they have been relentlessly terrible since Daniel Snyder took over. Not that he isn't trying, not that he'll spend money, you know, but whatever it is, it ain't happening there. And then Cincinnati, you know, they went to a Super Bowl, but then they came damn
once
close to winning it,
time.
Too.
Yeah.
But you know how long ago that was, folks? That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was when the Silver Dome was still standing.
That was a long time ago. I mean, yeah, but I mean, there, you know, but things should be cyclical. But the Atlanta thing is, they're the ones that going from where we would have thought of them. I'm thinking about a year ago, just dialed back to the beginning of the 2018 season. I think that we considered them to be, you know, in the upper, if you were going to grade the NFL,
a high team,
and the tiers, they're in the top tier.
Yeah.
Right? You'd have a cluster, however many teams you put to 3, 4, 5, they'd be one of those 3, 4, 5 teams. And now they're just, you know, it's sad.
And that's still with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones and some of the other people that they have. So it's incredible. All right, let's take a shift here, Bobby, and talk briefly about college football and then, of course, to the World Series in the NBA. So the biggest headline out of the college football weekend was a stunner. Illinois, unranked Illinois. Upsetting number 6 Wisconsin 24-23. There are so many elements of this that were surprising, including that 24 number, since Wisconsin had specialized in keeping teams down around the zero mark.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, their defense gives up 24 points to Illinois, loses on a last-second field goal after an interception, which was their third turnover of the day. And this has turned what a lot of people thought was sort of, you know, okay, later in the season, we're going to get all the showdowns. We're going to have, especially this coming week, Ohio State at Wisconsin. Now everybody's up in the air. What does this do to the quality of wins? Is Big Ten going to be represented in this thing, et cetera, et cetera? I wonder, Bob, do you think that Wisconsin got caught looking ahead to the Ohio State game.
You got to wonder. I mean, it's been so long since Illinois, the Illini were relevant. And by the way, for people who don't know, they do have a familiar name coaching them, which a lot of people don't realize. Lovie Smith is their coach.
Right.
But I mean, they've just been no factor. You know, they've just been blah and nothing special. And yeah, it was a stunning win, and the nature of it was stunning. And of course, the second guessing that is going on about the play calling and should they have been passing the ball. It was third and five, I believe. And how much time was left? What was the deal when that interception took place?
But 2:32.
Okay, well, you know, that's debatable when you what they should do there. Anyway, it was big. Now
I'm running back in the.
Yeah, they got the best, arguably best running back in America. Yes, exactly. Still on my Heisman Trophy radar screen. But one of the things I'm thinking though right away is they could still beat Ohio State. when they play them, they could beat them.
Wouldn't that shake everything up?
Yeah. Well, that would really. I don't think
two top Big Ten teams have one loss, and Penn State is undefeated. But nobody really believes that Penn State is better than Ohio State or necessarily even Wisconsin. Now, Penn State will play Ohio State, so we'll find that out down the road. That's right before the Michigan game. And Michigan, of course, basically had its chance to make a statement in Penn State and fell, one play short, of tying it at the very, very end, getting into the end zone and just dying on their sword basically there. And now, of course, everybody's calling for Jim Harbaugh to, I don't know what they want him to do. They don't necessarily want him fired. But I think if he decided to go live with the Dalai Lama for a while, nobody would object in Michigan because they just don't see anything happening here. Yeah. So, but that was a stunner. And I'm going to say something else about college football because I watched a lot of the games on Sunday. And I watched the Clemson-Louisville game because it was early. I have to tell you, Bob, Clemson is still in the top four, I guess, in the rankings right now. But they do not look like a championship or even a playoff team to me. They are – the way Louisville ran all over them and scored on them early on in that game, even though the score ended up a blowout, but that was because Louisville kept making mistake after mistake after mistake, self-inflicted wounds. It wasn't Clemson's tight defense. And Trevor Lawrence – boy, if there was ever a guy who got overhyped to start a season, it was certainly him. He's not even in the distant talk about Heisman Trophy.
No.
And he makes he slings the ball. He's like he's reading his press clips as he drops back. I can do anything. Let me throw the ball into triple coverage. You know, he's getting picked off in end zones and they are not. And I don't know how they're going to get a whole lot better because they don't have anybody to play. You know, this is part
They
got nobody on their schedule.
They have to depend on the goodwill of the committee that they have a rep now. They have established themselves along with Alabama as the two dominant programs of the last half a dozen years, and they've got a rep, and so it's going to be interesting. It's going to be really interesting. We're closing in two more weeks. We get the first polls from the committee, and we'll find out what they're really thinking. But there's a lot of arguing, devil's advocate arguing against their inclusion in any top four right now. There's no question. It's going to be interesting to see how that shapes out. But we have to acknowledge the big potential development of the weekend, which was the ankle injury sustained by Tagovailoa. But apparently it's not serious enough. He's had Mitch Albom, until yesterday, or excuse me, this morning for me, were you aware of the existence of a medical procedure known as a tight rope surgery? I was not.
I was absolutely not. This is his second one.
Second one.
Yeah, he had one done on the high ankle sprain before, now they're doing it again.
Neither you nor I live in caves, and we try to keep abreast of pertinent sporting developments, and how we missed the original tight rope surgery is a mystery to me, unless it was under wraps. I don't know. Anyway, folks, this is supposed to be be a procedure that will get him back lickety-split. He'll be available. We'll see. He's supposed to be available in 2 weeks when they have the game that we're looking forward to. And I trust that the LSU Tigers aren't just teasing us, that they've been known to do with their performance. But that certainly is something to circle on your calendar, college football fans.
November 9th.
Generic football fans.
They're very lucky that they get Arkansas, which is 2-5, and then Mac Jones will start against them. They could beat them with their eyes closed.
It's interesting.
And then a bye week.
Yeah, Arkansas. You know, how old do you have to be now to remember when they were a perennial power, and it was Arkansas. Texas was the game, and Richard Nixon was sending them plays.
What was the chant for Arkansas? Isn't there
Whoopigsuey?
Yeah, Whoopigsuey.
Oh yeah. I mean,
Whoopigsuey.
You know, they're not. They just in football. You know, they're not relevant at all.
But we'll see if he's back. At the very least, he'll be rusty, not having played for a while. But, yeah, I agree with you. Who has ankle surgery in the middle of the season and barely misses a beat?
It's tightrope surgery, see?
Tightrope surgery.
Yes, it's tightrope surgery. Joe Burrow just keeps piling up numbers.
Yeah. We've talked enough football here because, as the immortal press box scream of baseball, gentlemen, baseball, we are now at World Series time. And a remarkable end to the Yankees-Astros series, which it looked like for a brief moment was going to take us to an amazing Game 7. And wouldn't that have been something to see? Yeah. I mean, I would have loved to have seen Yankees-Astros getting to their bullpens in Game 7. You know, anything could have happened. And after the Yankees' home run tied it up in the top of the ninth, and then, of all people, of course, Altuve steps in, and you almost could have written this thing. And boy, did he tattoo that ball. And Chapman could just you saw the look on his face. It was like a smile. It was weird.
It was very strange. Yeah, absolutely. Reaction. I don't even know how to describe it, but yes, you're right. Oh, by the way, I urge you and all our listeners, it's easy to find. Go access on YouTube or wherever the respective Spanish and Korean calls of the home run. the Korean one is absolutely, the Spanish one is predictable. The Korean one is priceless. You got to hear it.
I can't even fathom impersonation.
Oh, I loved it. But anyway, God, I'm going to ask you a question. Now we had one of those guys here. His career, sadly, is probably over. We had Pedroia. But with those feisty little guys who can play, don't they just put a buzz into baseball that no one else does?
Absolutely.
Altuve is one of my favorite players
ever. Kirby Puckett.
Ever.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
It's incredible that he's 5'6".
It's 160, and he generates that bat speed. But he's just a wonderful baseball player, as was Pedroia before he got hurt. Yeah. And you know, we had one 40 years ago. You know, I love this is Joe Morgan reincarnated to a degree. But there's something, there's an extra little, you know, je ne sais quoi, whatever would be the Spanish equivalent, that makes Biden even more enticing. You know, someday he'll probably share, you know, the Hall of Fame honor with Joe Morgan. I hope so. But I love him. And I got to say one other thing about technical baseball, if you will. Korea. Did you see the throw that he made to complete the double play in the eighth inning?
Yeah.
And it was clocked at like 90-something or other. Yeah. And he started the playoffs off, Mitch, with a play in the hole. I think it was the very first game against Tampa Bay. And he made a play in the hole, and he threw somebody out from a position that was, and it wasn't a catcher either, you know, it was at least an average runner, as I recall, with a throw. Then I tweeted at the time, this may stand up as the defensive play of the entire 2019 postseason. But we've had plenty of, and then to see some of his arm, I've never seen a better shortstop arm. I mean, there may be a few you could nominate, but boy, between the two of them, this is they are. I'm glad to have them around.
We're going to see a great defense in this series, particularly if you count pitching as defense. And starting off with Gerrit Cole, who has been rested now And everybody will be back on their, at least to start, will be back on their rest and their routine. The Nationals, of course, everybody's going to ask, is it too much rest? And, yeah, you know, we've seen this happen with the Tigers. And Max Scherzer, of all people, can certainly remember you know, his Tiger years and how the Tigers went through that in 2012, waiting too long to get started. We'll see if there's rust. Right now, it looks like Scherzer and Cole to start it off. Verlander going in the second game and Strasburg. And it's just, boy, I'm sure, you know, you're a walking encyclopedia, so you'll probably tell me, of course, Mitch, this has happened a gazillion times. But has there ever been better 1-2 starters for when you put both teams up together?
I'd say
Scherzer, Verlander, Cole, Strasburg, as you're going to see all four of them in the first two games.
Yeah, I'd say you probably have to go back to the 05 Giants A's when Mathewson and McGinnity against the Connie Mack guys. That was the all shutout World Series, all five games.
Wow.
So one and five by the A's were shutouts. You probably have to go back to that. Oh, no, Mitch, I've thought about it, and nothing in recent memory, you know, comes to mind, which just brings me to, I'll pose it as a question, you know, here for you. What do you make of the odds? I mean, do they strike you in any way whatsoever, the fact that the Astros have been made such a heavy favorites?
I have to presume that they're doing that off of experience and that the factor of, you know, been here before, done this before, stage isn't too big. We may be looking at a dynastic team in the Houston Astros and I guess that's where the odd makers are coming in. I cannot see this being anything less than a six-game series.
Odds are, you know, obviously we all know, I'm not saying anything that any of our savvy listeners don't know. Odds are simply the Las Vegas opinion, professional opinion on what the public perception is.
Right.
Right? It's their opinion of our perception.
Well, and it's their opinion of how people are going to bet. You know, it's all about betting.
Well, yeah, but how they're going to bet based on their perception.
Yes, based on their perception.
That's what I'm
saying.
Yeah.
So they feel
that the American public, baseball fans who are bettors, have elevated the Astros to a significant degree over the Nationals. To which I say, balderdash. In reality, how you have just identified these incredible pitching matchups in games one and two, and then when you extrapolate and go farther, you have a Washington team that will throw out Pat Corbin and Anibal Sanchez. Sanchez, who was twice in his career taken no hitters into a seventh inning as recently as 2 weeks ago. And I find them, if they pitch to their capability against a Houston team, Mitch, who did not swing the bats well at all against the Yankees in general terms, you know, to me, this is a damn near a toss-up series in reality, to me.
I cannot see it anything less than six, and wouldn't surprise me if it goes seven. I do think bullpens are going to end up being a much bigger story about this than we can predict, and that's going to be the most unpredictable part of this series. You know, both teams are not supposed to be known for their bullpens. And whichever ones I think steps up and does the more surprisingly good job is going to probably end up winning the series. You'll get the game threes and fours where, the starters might be on a short string and they're going to look to the pen to try to win the games for them. But, you know, I also think you've got some like, as you pointed out, some really good defense in some of the guys who play and considering that you don't have Bryce Harper, you still got some impressive offense in here. No, it's not the Yankees and all the home runs that they hit, but between, you know, a Brantley, Altuve, a Bregman, a Gurriel, an Alvarez on one side, a Rendon, a Soto, Howie Kendrick's having a ridiculous postseason, yep. Ryan Zimmerman on the other. You got guys to watch that are going to be fun to watch.
Trey Turner. Yeah. No, I think I'm really looking forward to it in that regard. I think it can be really good, and I'm happy. And rooting wise, I'd like I'd be nice for the city of Washington and for that franchise to win, but I'm going to be perfectly comfortable either way. I'm it's about almost as neutral as you can be. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the show, kind of thing. So, by the way, I'm going to throw this one out there. If I were the one possible edge that I think might, it's sometimes it does come into play, and I've seen series, we've all seen them when it does, is the manager. And you got to give AJ Hinch the check mark if you're going in that if you're going down that that route of comparing positions and players and strengths and weaknesses. You have to give the check mark edge to AJ Hinch over Davey Martinez.
Well, all the one thing I ask for, and this is what I ask for going into every World Series now in very recent memory, please, Lord, let the games move at a speed in which people, both people who are in their 50s and 60s and people who are in their teens, can stay up and watch them. Because if the end of all these games happens after midnight, the shooting in the foot of baseball for the long run, and I don't want to hear about what their attendance records or ratings, I'm talking about the long run. Because everyone who has ever done the sports reporters over the years will talk fondly about how they fell in love with baseball as kids. Baseball is not really something you get into later in life. It's just not a sport that in your 30s or 40s you decide, you know what, I'm going to pay attention to baseball. It's you got to get it early on. It's the reason why foreigners, when they come to the country, at least the ones that I know, they can't understand baseball. They don't have the time for the patience for it. It takes too long. It's like cricket, for us. How many times have we been to England? I still can't get into it. But you got to form that passion when you're a kid. And if you can't stay up and watch these games in the World Series versus, I'm not saying we got to go back to the transistor radio, 1 o'clock starts and being in school and hiding the radio and put it in our ears, okay? We don't have to be those guys. But man, wouldn't it be nice to see a game start at 5 o'clock, and played in daytime shadows? And of course, we never see that anymore.
Well, and the thing is about abandoning weekend day games, which is, of course, is a curse in regular season baseball. That Saturday afternoon game is rapidly becoming extinct. At a 1 o'clock local start on Saturday anywhere in America is a surprise, pleasant surprise. Some of my memories of being a young baseball fan and the World Series are of the weekend games that I was available to see. The home, the other games, it was a matter of when you got home from school. We got out at 2:30. I was able to get home by 3. You might see the last couple of innings because in those games, the games were going to be done by 3:15 or 3:30 if they started at 1. But you're right. Like Larson's perfect game. I saw the end of the game because I got home in time. The game only took like 2 hours and 10 minutes, but I was home in time to see the end of the game. But yeah, you're right. No, it's very important. But they don't. It's all about TV and it's all about the money. And the owners are wedded to it, and they're not going to change. And blah blah blah. But you're so 100% right. The other night it was we were coaching a 2 hour mark. It was the fifth inning. And I tweeted something out, and of course, which is always a ridiculously stupid thing to do in any regard, because no matter what you say, even at I love mom, someone will hit your father.
Yeah,
you can't win, and yet you know that. I was lamenting this, and now you're old man. Oh, shut up, blah 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 blah. By the way, I was when LeMahieu hit the home run, and then there were two outs and nobody on. I'm taking stock of myself. I'm sitting in that easy chair, and I'm going, I feel pretty good. I don't want it, but if they insist on going 12 and keep me up to 1:30, quarter to 2 today, because I don't have to get up tomorrow morning, I'm okay with it. I mean, I'm not okay with it, but I'll deal with it. I wasn't, as opposed to, I was tired.
If it was a Wednesday night, you might have had a different
thing. Tell me about it in the morning. No, I was ready, and but I didn't have to worry about it. I'm telling you, go get that Korean call. You want it.
Last thing before parting shots, quickly, we cannot ignore this. And boy, this is a fun time of year when all this stuff is going on. But the NBA season starts for real this week. And, I hate to bury leads, but I mean, we do have World Series and all this other stuff going on. There's so much change in the NBA. What's the one team, if you had to pick one, the one team that fascinate. I'm not saying who's going to win.
I understand.
I'm saying which team is of most interest to you to see what's going to happen.
And probably still will be New Orleans because of you-know-who and Lonzo Ball, who I think is going to flourish. I thought was going to flourish. And, those two were going to be interesting. And, Zion's hurt. He's going to miss. We don't know how much. He's already hurt his knee. There's something to be concerned. He had a knee injury in college. He had a knee injury in the summer. He's got another knee injury. He carries that weight. There's a real issue here. The other team, though, and they had a wonderful year last year, and I just can't wait to see them again because they have one of the most fascinating players of recent times. That, of course, is the Denver Nuggets and Nikola Jokic, who is he's a combination of 1955 and 2047 somehow, God, I love them, and they're going to be interesting.
So you pick two teams that I don't think most people are picking. I would go. It's a toss up. I can make it singular if I can identify by the city, and that is Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, that's kind of a given. You were asking for.
It's okay to answer with a given.
Okay.
I'm actually more interested in the Clippers than the Lakers. I mean, obviously, we're all going to watch the Lakers and see what's happened. The Lakers had LeBron last year and some of the guys, Kuzma, and some of the guys that they still have there. And it's going to be, basically we're watching Anthony Davis with the Lakers and seeing what difference he makes. The Clippers are totally different. I mean, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George change everything there. And them with Doc Rivers, been waiting for Doc Rivers, who is a better coach than the Los Angeles Lakers coach, who name him win fabulous prizes, everybody. I want to see what Rivers can do with those two superstars and filling out the roster that they have. And can the Clippers really, in the shadow of LeBron James and Anthony Davis playing in the same building, can they win? Can they go further? Can they actually take what was a pipe dream back when the Lakers were Showtime and the Clippers were, coming out of San Diego and then L.A. and then they were such a weak sister. Could they actually grab the spotlight there in L.A. and be the better team?
I know.
That's interesting to me.
They're fighting such a brand thing.
Yep.
And yet it's a dream. I'm an L.A. basketball fan in general. This is cotton candy. This is phenomenal. It's absolutely wonderful. Where I come down on this, because I'm a unabashed Doc guy,
and
I consider him to be one of the finer people that I've ever met in sports, I'm happy. I won. Yeah, and he had a anyway. Yes. Oh, L.A. is going to be completely fascinating. And couldn't you imagine if we wind up with a Western Conference Finals? All in the same building.
You could stay in your own locker room. That'd be the first. I think it'd be the first time that a team never had to switch locker rooms for an NBA conference final, right?
Yeah.
Because they each have their own locker rooms there. All right, something to remember. All right, well, lots to be looking at this week. And when we come back on Thursday, there'll be a lot to talk about already. Okay. NBA season will be underway. World Series will be a couple games in, et cetera. Before we go to our parting shots, let's take a pause for a word from our sponsor, Kronos. Kronos knows that, like many organizations, maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full, and part-time workers can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos put HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge. And they're empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every step of the way. You can learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works. All right, it's time for our parting shots. Bob, I yield to you.
Now, parting shots.
All right, Mitch. Now, with the NBA season opening on Tuesday night, I'd like to point out how interestingly non-competitive it has been over its first 73 years. You heard me. It's usually been in the clutches of just a few teams at any given point in history. Now, putting the ABA on the side for a moment, it's undeniable that the Pacers, Nets, Magic, Hornets, Nuggets, Clippers, Pelicans, who began as the original Hornets, remember, Timberwolves, Suns, and Grizzlies have never won it all. And that the Knicks, Bucks, Heat, Bullets, Cavaliers, Trailblazers, Mavericks, Kings, hold on here, and Hawks, hold on here, have won once. The charter member Knicks last won 46 years ago. The 76ers, who, by the way, came from Syracuse, last won 36 years ago. Okay, the Kings. There should be a banner commemorating their 1951 title, won in Rochester. That's New York, not Minnesota. That franchise has gone from Rochester to Cincinnati to Kansas City to Sacramento. And the Hawks should hoist one to celebrate their 1958 title, won in, oh yeah, St. Louis. Oh, and the Pacers did win three times in the ABA. And the Minneapolis Lakers won five times in ye olden days before skedaddling to the left coast. Finally, the Trailblazers, Wizards, they were nay the Bullets, remember, and Sonics won successive titles from 1977 through 1979, and none have won since. What's it all mean? I don't know, but I'm rooting for the spiritual grandchildren of the Rochester Royals. Go Kings!
I need a roadmap to get through that. There are forces at work in the NFL that defy logic. Take the case of the Los Angeles Chargers. A couple years ago, they hired Anthony Lynn to take over after several losing seasons under previous coach Mike McCoy. Lynn did his job. He turned things around. The Chargers went 9-7 his first year and 12-4 his second. The ageless Philip Rivers was on fire much of last season. He had Melvin Gordon to run and to catch and Keenan Allen to throw to. The Chargers tied for the best record in the AFC last year with the Chiefs. They won their first-round playoff game and were stopped only by the eventual Super Bowl winner New England Patriots. And then came this year. And what happened? The wheels have fallen off. The Chargers are 2-5. Yes, the same team 12-4 last year are 2-5. Yesterday, they lost in the wildest fashion, having two touchdowns overturned by replay in the final minute and fumbling their last chance away at the goal line. It's the same coach, the same quarterback, largely the same players, but the Chargers seem all but done 7 games into this season. There are forces at work in the NFL. They don't always make sense. It's why a team on a roll needs to take advantage when they get their opportunity, because the future can turn dark very quickly. That's going to wrap things up for today's Sports Reporters Podcast. We thank you for joining us. You can hear this anywhere you hear popular podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Pandora, you name it. And if you like what you heard, leave us a comment. If you didn't, leave us 2 comments so we can get better. We will see you on Thursday. Until then, on behalf of Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying have a great week.